Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 421 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Anyway, let's dive straight into the review part of the show. Eddie, jump in at any point if you watched anything that I'm speaking of. I don't think you would have seen this one, but there was one fight that went down on DAZN, I believe, on the Saturday, November 4th, at the Polideportivo de Cartago in Costa Rica. Over here, your Castaval, now 30-2. A unanimous decision over 10 two-minute rounds for the IBF and WBO world minimum weight titles against, I think, former world champion. I think she was a world champion in the past, Annabelle Ortiz. That's how I thought the fight would go. Good fight, actually, while it lasted. Annabelle Ortiz, now 33-6, obviously been around the block. It was a good fight. I think it had a few scrappy moments here and there, but yeah, good fight. I think Yocasta-Val, you know, was the clear winner for me. And it was a good watch, that one. Moving now to the Casino de Monte Carlo Sao Medicine in Monte Carlo, Monaco. This one was also on DAZN. Let's start with this one here. I actually missed this fight here. But anyway, Jalissa Guzman, now 13-3 with two draws. She lost the unanimous decision over 10 two-minute rounds against Ramla Ali. Now 9-1, Ramla Ali, of course, come back here in this instant rematch and avenged her sole career defeat. She lost by stoppage to Guzman in the first fight. She come back here and won the fight unanimously over 10. I think it was a close fight. If I remember correctly, I think it was 96-94 times 3 for Ramla Ali, so 6 rounds to 4. I said it on last week's show. I think Ramla Ali was about 6-4. Which means you could put £4 to win £10 back, you know. And I said it's worth that. I think, you know, Ramla Ali was worth that price. She ended up winning on points, like I say. So I told everyone about that. I don't know if anyone listened to me, but that bet would have won. Also on the card as well, Suleiman Sissoko moved to 17-0, a unanimous decision against Isaias Lucero, who's now 16-2. Really good fight, actually. It was for the WBC silver welterweight title. Lucero down in round two after having a really good round in round one. He was quite a big puncher, Lucero. You could see that. He hurt Sissoko in round one. At times, Sissoko boxed really well, really clever. He was the much more skilled fighter, but at times, Lucero was having his moments, like I say, you know, that big Mexican heart. And you know, he was causing a lot of problems for Sissoko, who for me hasn't really had an easy way to 17-0. It hasn't all been, you know, what do they say, sunshine and rainbows or whatever it is. It hasn't been easy. I think for Sissoko, they've got to be very careful with him. You know, they've got him to 17-0 undefeated, but I think, you know, I don't think there's something missing there, I think, from him as well. I think perhaps he could also be a little bit chinny. So I think they need to be careful how they move him. Obviously, they've got high hopes for him. But yeah, even though he won the fight and won the fight, you know, fairly wide in the end, I still felt that, you know, he didn't look great here against this guy who I thought he would pretty much have his way with and not really get in any bits of trouble. Also on the card, a massive upset here. We saw Sivanathi Nonshinga from South Africa lose his IBF World Light Flyweight title. He was KO'd in round two, a brilliant shot that put him over. He's now 12-1. He got knocked out by Adrian Curiel, who's now 24-4 with a draw. He was a massive underdog. Everyone thought Nonshinga was going to win this fight, probably by stoppage. I thought he would win probably on points, but yeah, gets knocked out here in one of the biggest upsets you'll see all year. Yeah, shocker there. No one gave Curiel a chance. And in the main event, Joe Caldina now 17-0. A majority decision win for him over 12 rounds. He retains his IBF World Super Featherweight title against Eduardo Vasquez, who's now 15-2. Not the best performance from Joe Caldina. It was a really, really close fight. I think you could see that, obviously, majority decision over 12. Wasn't the best fight either, you know. I think Oshaki Foster, you know, would have been looking at that fight there and probably, you know, been licking his lips, you know, because he's a much better opponent than Edward Vasquez, and his fight was much more entertaining the week before. And yeah, he'd be looking at that thinking, if I was in there against Caldina tonight, I'd win this fight. But like I say, Caldina, I think there's a chance he could be a little bit tight at the weight. I don't know if he did the weight too well. I think Joe Caldina's a really good fighter, you know. I think a lot of people are kind of being a bit too harsh on him here. I think Vasquez, you know, he's a guy that he might have just underestimated a little bit as well. But again, you can't really do that at the highest level. Look, he got the job done, but like I say, it was so close, it could have gone either way, and that is not what we expected. A lot of people thought that Edward Vasquez is just going to be a guy that he's going to, you know, beat quite easily. Some people were saying, you know, knockout. Some people were saying wide on points, and in the end, both things didn't happen. It was razor close, or razor thin, the difference between the two men at the end of the fight. I wasn't scoring it. You know, I wasn't scoring it, but yeah, Vasquez was putting a lot of pressure on Caldina. Again, it was a little bit like Sissoko Lucero in terms of one guy being the much more skilled and better fighter, but the other guy maybe having a bit too much hunger, a bit too much energy, and, you know, could really put the pressure on and put their punches together and overwhelm you a little bit. It was a little bit like that, but yeah, you know, Caldina was the much cleaner boxer, and like I say, I wasn't scoring it, but it was a really close fight, and it was quite a bad showing from Caldina. It didn't give you that impression that, like, he's the number one in the division after that. It kind of made you, you know, a little bit worried for him if he were to fight Oshaki Foster now, to be honest with you, if you're only as good as your last fight. Moving now, though, to the Casino Miami Jai Alai in Miami, Florida, USA. I don't know if you saw any of this, Eddie, but Don King put on a show. I'm going to start with the undercard here. Jonathan Guidry with a win, now 20-1 with two draws. He was able to knock out in two rounds Jesus Escalera, who was 19-0 with 19 KOs. We didn't know how good he'd be. The 43-year-old 5'11 southpaw from Puerto Rico, living in Florida, so it was kind of in his backyard. But yeah, Guidry with the KO in two rounds. Like I say, the guy had obviously padded up his record quite a bit. So yeah, good win there for Guidry. Also on the card, former world champion Trevor Bryan, now 22-2. He was knocked out in round 7 by a friend of the show, Cassius Chaney. What a win for him. He's now 23-1. Trevor Bryan down in round 2 and in round 7. It was an interesting fight. I was watching this one, and it was very kind of good at times from Chaney, but then he'd kind of disappear for a while. You know, he started the fight well, he kept hitting Trevor Bryan with the backhand, you know, he showed his speed at times, Chaney, but then it seemed like he'd get tired and he'd disappear for a while. Like I say, I think Trevor Bryan, in the mid sort of rounds, you know, rounds 3, 4, 5, that kind of area, I felt like he was kind of picking up a few of the rounds. He looked like he was in horrible shape, Trevor Bryan, but he seemed to kind of at some point get into a bit of a rhythm, get into a bit of a groove, and he was outworking Chaney. Chaney was on the back foot. He wasn't really, you know, he didn't have a high punch output. He seemed to be very inactive with his shots, and I was wondering how he can be maybe so tired. I was looking at him thinking he hasn't really done much, but what is he doing? Is he going to just come back with a second wind? Like, what's going on with Chaney? He's letting the fight slip away. When the two guys were actually exchanging, Chaney looked a much better fighter, but then, like I say, he went mute for a few rounds and Trevor Bryan got back into the fight, and I felt that Chaney let him back in that fight, but then, like I say, cranked up the gears in round 7 and he put him out with one of the KOs of the year. I'm sure it will be Trevor Bryan hospitalized. The latest I've heard is that Trevor Bryan's still in hospital. He's responsive, but says he has no feeling in his legs, which is a bit of a concern, especially seeing as it's been a few days. That is really worrying, actually. But like I say, I don't know if that's the latest update, but we're wishing Trevor Bryan all the best. Happy for Cassius Chaney. Like I say, I think it's the win that his career needed, and I hope he pushes on from this. Also on that card as well, we saw Noel Gevor move to 27-2. He TKO'd in just 3 rounds Ilunga Makabu, who seems to be shot to bits now. He's 29-4. I don't know if he'll ever pick up win number 30. It was for the vacant WBC World Cruiserweight title. Noel Gevor just steamrolled Makabu, really. It was never going to go the distance. You know, Makabu looked awful against Badu Jack, I think, over a year ago. And I wondered if it was maybe going to be an off night. You know, he can certainly crack, but you know, he now just cannot seem to take a shot. And I think if you're a cruiserweight, you're going to be looking at Noel Gevor thinking that you can probably go in there and beat him anyway. So yeah, I don't think he's going to be a title holder for a long time. I think, you know, that's kind of the easy champion to go for, I'd say. Can't remember who the champions are right now at cruiserweight aside from Chris Billam Smith. I can't think who else has got the belts. Yeah, it's a bit confusing at cruiserweight. But anyway, good win for Noel Gevor nonetheless. Moving now to the Tahoe Blue Event Center in Lake Tahoe, Nevada, USA. This one was live on ESPN. It was live on Sky Sports. Effie Ajagba with a good win. He's now 19-1. A TKO for him in round 4 against Joseph Goodall, who's now 10-2 with a draw. It was for the WBC silver heavyweight title. I didn't know that Joseph Goodall held a win in the amateurs over Effie Ajagba. I didn't know that until, I think, you know, the night of the fight. I saw someone tweet it and I thought, wow, really? Went and had a look and saw that that was the case. But yeah, Ajagba, like I said, I think he's really improved. Over the last couple of fights, he's been looking good. Like we said on last week's show, these two guys in their last fights boxed the same guy. Well, Effie Ajagba actually had a fight in between. He boxed, I can't remember the guy's name, that guy that got DQ'd, the southpaw. Zan Kosobutski was his name. He boxed him in the kind of interim period. But both guys in recent times held wins against Stefan Shaw. And Joseph Goodall had a much easier night with Stefan Shaw than Effie Ajagba did. But like we said, you know, triangle theories don't work. And Effie Ajagba completely dominated Joseph Goodall. You know, you could see that really from the opening bell, to be honest with you. He was fully in control. And yeah, landed a shot in the fourth round to get the referee to say that's enough. Good performance from Effie Ajagba. They're talking about him against Jared Anderson. It's a fight I'd love to see. If he can get his mind back on track. There's a lot going on with Jared Anderson at the moment outside of the ring. Also on the card as well, Raymond Muratala, now 19-0. He got in there with Diego Nunes, who was 18-0. It was the battle of 18-0s. Both guys were big punchers, but Raymond Muratala with the TKO in round 8. Completely dominated the fight as well. Probably won every single round. I think, again, Muratala is getting better with every fight. He looked great against Jeremiah Nakafila, who we'll be talking about later on in the show. So, yeah, all the best to Muratala. There's a lot of big fights for him that can be made, I think, at lightweight. And he's another guy, you know, he wants the big fights. And I think he brings a lot to the table. That fight was for the NABF and WBO global lightweight titles. And a fight as well that we should mention on that card as well. Henry Lebrun with a majority decision win over 10 rounds at super featherweight. He's now 19-0. He took the O away from the previously undefeated William Foster III. I think William Foster III was the slight favourite going in, so that's a mini upset there for Henry Lebrun. Great stuff for him. Moving now to Sochi, Russia. Over here, there was one fight that went down on Sunday. We saw Radzab Butayev move to 16-1. He managed to get a retirement win against Fazlidin Gabe Nazarov, the 2016 Olympic gold medalist. Gabe Nazarov, if I'm not mistaken, didn't come out for round four, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was the result, if my memory serves me right. I think Butayev got the round three retirement, so Gabe Nazarov didn't come out for round four. Great win there for Radzab Butayev. And the final card to mention of the review part, again, Eddie, I don't know if you saw any of this. Two fights to mention over here. It went down at the Edison Ballroom in Manhattan, New York, USA, Tuesday of this week, the 7th of November. We saw Mayo Yoshida. She's now 16-4. She lost a very close fight over 10 2-minute rounds to Sharetta Metcalf, who's now 13-4 with a draw. I think Metcalf is a lady that's getting better and better every fight as well. I think last time out she was able to outpoint a girl that we've had on the show before. Oh gosh, completely lost it. It was right there. She's been on the show before, the girl. And Sharetta Metcalf was able to, I think, narrowly beat her on points, if I'm not mistaken. Melissa Odessa Parker. That was a really big win there. I was quite surprised to see Sharetta Metcalf pull that off. Again, Melissa Parker, you know, disputes that. Feels like she was robbed. But anyway, she got in there with Yoshida, who's a former world champion. Couple of the scorecards a little bit wide, but I think the right lady won, and it was for the IBF Intercontinental Bantamweight title, so all the best there to Metcalf. And the main event, Jamel Herrin with a TKO win in the very first round. He came out of retirement for this fight here, working under his new trainer, Wayne McCulloch. Jamel Herrin now 24-4. Like I say, the TKO in the first round against the previously undefeated 13-0 Nicholas Molina, who's now 13-1. Jamel Herrin looks so heavy-handed in that ring. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. You know, got in there, busted Molina up straight away. Like, his nose was bleeding, his face was getting busted up. And then he dropped him once, then he got back up, dropped him the second time. He looked like Deontay Wilder. I couldn't believe my eyes. Jamel Herrin back with a bang, making the statement that, you know, that I think he would have wanted to make. Yeah, it was great to see him back. Really good to see him back. He donated half of his purse as well, I think, to the to something to do with the Marines. Obviously, they're close to his heart. He's one of them. And I think, half his purse to the Marines and also to the NYPD, if I'm not mistaken. Good guy, Jamel Herrin. Friend of the show, obviously. But yeah, great to see him back, happy and healthy. And a statement win there to get Nicholas Molina out of there. Again, in my betting group, I put together a little treble on the three fights on this card. I think it was Micaiah Krebs, Jamel Herrin, and Sharetta Metcalf. I picked Metcalf on points, Micaiah Krebs on points, and Jamel Herrin by KO. And that returned, I think, just over five times your stake. So yeah, if anyone's in my betting group, you'd have benefited from that little one there. It was nice to get a little win there on the boxing bets on a Tuesday evening. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former WBO heavyweight world champion. It is, of course, Mr. Joseph Parker. Joseph, welcome back on the show, my man.
Thank you. As always, thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure, Joe. So we last spoke back in January. At that time, you were getting ready to fight Jack Massey. So yeah, you've been busy. Just briefly on that fight, I was quite shocked by that performance, Joe. Massey was obviously a cruiserweight coming up. He'd never boxed at heavy. I still don't understand, but how did he manage to go the distance? Did you underestimate him? What happened?
Nah, listen, it's obviously he stepped up to the challenge. And there are a few things, like, I don't think people really understand, where you have a camp and you're still trying to find out what works for you, if you know what I mean. And at that stage of my career, everything hadn't clicked. But then from after that performance and things, and then I started searching and and looking for what I needed. And I made a few changes. And from then on, I felt like I was finally found the right, you know, person involved in camp and found the right balance. And I think everything is upwards from then.
Yeah, it's important to mention, obviously, that was early days there with Andy Lee. We're honest every time we speak, and I was a little bit puzzled. I thought you'd have just steamrolled Massey, but, you know, credit to him.
Yeah, I'm not sure when you guys, like, so being in the ring, and you know you have five gears, but you're stuck on two.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
You know, no excuses, though. Like, Jack Massey did come in and you know, with the distance. But when you're sort of fighting and you know you have five gears, but you're stuck on two, whether it's overtraining, not enough rest, or whatever it is, but there was something that affected my body and how I felt going to the fight. But you don't make any excuses. And when you sign up to a fight, you got to, no matter what's happening, you have to, you know, put up with it and give it your best shot.
But since then, you've been excellent. A trip to Australia quickly to knock out Faiger Opelu. I think Opelu obviously isn't on your level, but still to stop him in one round is highly impressive. And then the other week in Saudi Arabia, that win against Simon Keane, for me, is the best you've looked in a long time, Joe. Talk me through it.
Well, since that massive fight in the beginning of the year, I made some positive and good changes in my team and career, which I felt like has made a big difference going into these recent fights. I still got Andy Lee as the head coach, looking after the boxing side of things, but I've got George Lockhart in camp, who I give a lot of credit to for the work that we've done outside of camp, and not to do with boxing, the strength and conditioning, nutrition, and I felt like having a better balance on all these things have made me a better fighter, not overtraining, not doing too much, and not leaving it all in the gym. And instead, we're actually monitoring it and making sure that everything's on point leading into a fight, which I feel like that's the biggest difference now leading into future fights.
And Joe, obviously, I don't want you to take that the wrong way when I say it's the best you've looked in a long time. I felt you were excellent against Joe Joyce, despite losing. I think you were excellent in the Chisora rematch. But both of them fights, particularly the Joyce one, they were wars, you know, fights that you had to bite down on the gum shield for. But the other week in Saudi, you looked the sharpest you've looked for a long time. I think that's probably the better word. Is that fair? I think sometimes you've...
That's fair. Like, everything, not only in the boxing, like, everything, like... My family life is perfect. Now I have a great team where I feel like everything is clicking and gelling a lot better than it did in the past. And I just feel a lot more, I feel alive and I feel like I rekindled what I was missing in boxing and in my passion for boxing. I feel like it's come back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think sometimes you've gone out there and you've beaten many fighters, but without necessarily looking as sharp as you did the other week, whereas this time you were clinical, you controlled every second, and you found your feet again, you know, rather than just kind of plodding forward. You were moving excellently. You were brilliant the other week.
Well, thank you. Listen, Simon Keane did take the fight, and it was a good challenge. I know he hadn't had the same level of opposition, but it was his chance to try and make a statement and make a name for himself. But, you know, I did train very hard for this. I was in camp for 12 weeks, and we had George Lockhart doing our nutrition. I had George doing my strength on this team. Tyson had his own team doing the boxing, Sugar Hill, and did his own strength work. So we did train very hard for that fight. I think on fight night, I felt great, and I felt like everything clicked. And when everything is clicking and you're a happy fighter, everything just flows a lot better.
And as you know, heavyweight Michael Hunter's a good friend of mine, and trust me, he doesn't give out compliments very easily, but he did text me after your fight, and he said, "Did you just see Joseph Parker?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "He looked really good." And trust me, that means a hell of a lot coming from him. He doesn't like to give anyone compliments. So yeah, great, great performance, like I say. You've ended up having...
Michael Hunter is a hell of a fighter, right? And I've always wanted to share the ring with Michael because I rate him very highly, and I rate him at the top. And I know he's avoided at the minute. And I think we were texting back and forth to try to make a fight happen. The only issue is that we haven't had a promoter who's able to put it on. But I think in future, if we can get together and do something, it'd be awesome to share the ring with Mike Hunter. I have a lot of respect for him and what he's done in boxing, and the way that he's going about, you know, trying to make a fight for himself, you know, trying to get anyone into the ring.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of respect between you both, of course. You've ended up having 3 fights this year. Most heavyweights would be delighted with that. If I'm not mistaken, though, you'd like a 4th before the year's out, Joe.
Yeah, I'm looking at fighting in December. We're working on it at the moment, and if everything comes off as planned, I'm in New Zealand at the moment, but I should be heading out very soon back to camp and back to, preparing for the next fight if we can lock in December.
And are there any realistic opponents being discussed at the moment?
We're looking at anyone in the top 10, there's Zhang's name was thrown about, Herkovich, there's a lot of names out there, and it's just about finding who's available and who's keen to make it happen.
And you mentioned Zhang there, Joe. I was at the Zhang and Joyce rematch, and obviously it was terrible for Joe. It's so mad because before they ever fought each other, I felt that Zhang was tailor-made for Joe. I thought that was the worst style possible for Zhang. The relentlessness, the toughness of Joe, I thought he'd just outdog him. But obviously, he couldn't do it through 2 fights. What's your reaction to that saga? Because it shocked me. I don't know if it shocked you.
Yeah, it did shock me. I knew Zhang had the power. I just didn't think he was able to deal with Joe Joyce's pressure. And the first fight stopped was because of the lumped eye. And then the second fight, he came in heavier, and we're just not sure. I think Zhang had came in with a lot more confidence from the first fight. And when someone wins a fight and have a rematch, I'm not sure going into the rematch straight away is. And a lot of cases, the fighter who won the first fight always wins the second fight. There are some cases where it's the other way around. So I'm just not sure. It was a bit of a shock to everyone. He was in the position to fight for what he was close to fighting for a world title, and he took the fight with Zhang, and twice Zhang got the better of him. So I think Joe's a hell of a fighter. Hopefully he can relax and chill and recover and come back stronger, come back better. At the age that he is, I'm not sure how long he has left, but he says that he's got a lot to give, still got a lot to give the boxing world.
Yeah, we hope so. And I was going to say, obviously, you want to be back out in about 4 weeks' time. It's not a lot of notice. There's obviously going to be a lot of guys that would be, I guess, hesitant to take a fight off that, short of a notice. But when I asked you what kind of level that you're looking at getting in with, you said top 10. So, yeah, should we expect a top 10 guy then in about 4 weeks' time for you, Joe?
Yeah. Well, listen, 4, 5, whatever it is, I think it's time to fight someone in the top 10. I know I've always wanted to fight someone in the top 10, but it's just about getting the fights locked in and making sure that the promoters are happy and managers happy. Everyone, there's a lot of things that have to be in place in order to make these fights happen. So, if I can make it happen, to finish the year off with a bang, that'll be awesome.
And I wanted to ask Joe, promotionally, what's going on with you right now? Am I right in saying you're no longer with Boxer?
No longer with Boxer, but we are. We're in talks with them. They if they can line up a big fight, we're in talks with all the promoters. And with the last fight, we did some work with Queensbury Promotions running the event. I think with the next one, we might be doing some work. We're just going to figure out who's got the best fight for us or the best fighter for us to fight.
And, of course, we have to mention it, Fury and Ngannou. You're Tyson's really, really close friend. I'm Tyson's biggest fan, and I'm so biased that it's untrue. But for me, his performance was very shocking. It wasn't up to standards. I thought he'd play with Ngannou. What did you make of it, and have you spoke much to Tyson since the fight to know what he's thinking or how he's feeling?
Yeah, I was in camp with Tyson for 12 weeks, and there's, no matter what you do in camp, whether you train as hard as you can, you do everything right. But when it comes to fight night and it doesn't go the way you think, everyone thinks that you've mucked around in camp. He had the best of sparring. He had Martin Bacoli, he had Solomon Dacus, he had myself, he had a few other sparring partners. So he gave it everything he had, or he gave it everything he could, but just the performance on the night wasn't, we all know that wasn't close to what Tyson can do. And, so he didn't take Ngannou lightly. He trained so hard for it, but just the way he fought was a bit surprising to everyone.
And just coming down to my final couple of questions, what do you think Tyson should do next, Joe?
I think Tyson should fight Usyk. I think that fight should go ahead, and whoever just shows whoever the best is at this time. I think they should be fighting each other next.
And what are you up to at the moment? Obviously, you mentioned you're back in New Zealand. Honestly, you've been traveling here, there, and everywhere. But what's happening over there at the moment?
Just spending time with family, enjoying every day. Just doing the school drop-off, school pick-up, appointments here and there, a bit of training. Just living the normal, happy life. And just spending some time, quality time with my wife and kids. And, you know, because, you know, when fights are locked in, you're away from camp and you're away from the fights and you get limited time when you're back home. So just making the most of it.
Yeah, and you're a long way away from home when you're deep in camp, like you say. Just before we wrap it up, Joe, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, as always, it's always a pleasure having you on. You're very much loved on this show.
Listen, it's great to be on. And to all the listeners, just... thank you guys for the support of the show, the support of the fighters, support of boxing. And there are some massive fights out there to be made. I'm still involved in the mix. And, you know, I'm going to give it everything I have. I know what I can do, and I just want to show you guys when it's time to do it.
There we go. If the other week was you know, a showing of what's to come in the future, I think we're all super excited. Joe, it's a pleasure, as always, speaking with you. Thank you for your time. Congrats again on that blistering performance, and we'll speak again soon.
Thanks, Joey. Thank you very much.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part is the news part of the show. One piece of news to mention, actually. We're going to see Richard Briakpor return to the ring on November the 18th against Dylan Bregion. That fight goes down... on the Wolves card at the Halls in Wolverhampton. It's going to be live on Sky Sports. I don't know much about that fight. There's a lot of people fuming that Richard Briakpor's having this fight, but it is what it is. Moving on to the preview part of the show, this one goes down later tonight at the Madison Square Garden Theatre in New York, USA. It's going to be live on USA UFC Fight Pass over here. We're going to see... the undefeated Irishman, Callum Walsh. He's 8-0 with 7 KOs, living in California from Cork Island. He gets in with Ishmael Villarreal, who's 13-1 with 9 KOs. The one loss came two fights ago. He lost to Ardrill Holmes Jr. by a split decision over 10 rounds there. They're expecting this to be a bit of a test for Callum Walsh. He's still a big favourite, but most people expecting him to win this fight on points. You can get a good price for him to win by a KO. Like I say, 7 of his 8 wins have come by a KO. All the best to Callum Walsh there. That's over 10 rounds. Moving on to this one, it goes down tomorrow. So there's boxing Thursday, Friday and Saturday here. This one goes down on Friday, like I say, tomorrow at the Brighton Centre in Brighton, Sussex, United Kingdom. It's going to be live on Channel 5. Probably just the main event or maybe the chief support and main event going to be actually aired live. But let's get stuck into the undercard here. We're going to see... Roman Fury, the brother of Tyson Fury, one of the many brothers. He's 2-0 at the moment. He gets in with Bradley Davies, who's 1-5 with a draw. What else do we have on this undercard? We're going to see Soltan Zorbek, 15-0. He gets in with Sergio Sosa, who's 13-3. Soltan Zorbek seems like he's been knocking around for a little while now. He's been quite inactive, if I'm not mistaken. Looks like he's had two fights this year. Just had the one in 2022, two in 2021, and then, one in 2020. Maybe he hasn't been as inactive as I thought. But anyway, 15-0, 11 KOs, gets in with Sergio Sosa, 13-3, from Argentina. All the best to Zorbek. Also on the card as well, we're going to see Lerone Richards, friend of the show. He's 17-0. He's back here in an 8-rounder, if I'm not mistaken. And he gets in with Mickey Ellison, who's 14-5. Been stopped twice, including in his last fight. Got stopped in round 8 against a guy called Radivoj Kaladzic, who's 28-2 now. Got stopped by Artur Beterbiev and got beat in the other fight to Marcus Brown on a split decision. So probably not a bad fighter there. But got stopped in one round, this guy here, Mickey Ellison. Got stopped in one round by Podraig McCrory back in 2020. I've got a feeling, even though Lerone Richards, you know, he's more so, you know, a guy that goes the distance, he's only got 4 KOs and he's 17 wins. I've got a feeling he might get a stoppage here. Just got a feeling. It's only 8 rounds, so there's not that much time. But in his last fight, he got in with Harry Matthews, who has only been stopped 10 times in 74 losses, and he managed to KO him in 4 rounds. So, yeah, I don't know. Lerone might just try to get the stoppage. We'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, it's another frustrating one for him. He's just signed a deal with Wasserman, so hopefully they can do something with him. But it's been such a frustrating thing for Lerone Richards. You know, I feel like he's, you know, probably been messed around a little bit. Like, I sent a tweet out the other day, and it was quite staggering when you actually look how long Lerone Richards has been a pro. You know, he's been a pro for 10 years. He's had 17 fights. 5 of those 17 fights took place in 2017. So if you ignore the year 2017, he's had 12 fights in 9 years. He's been so inactive, it's crazy. I just hope that he can still achieve his full potential given the bad hand he's been dealt. And I hope Wasserman are finally the right fit and can deliver the opportunities that he needs, because time is running out for Lerone Richards. He's not getting any younger. Also in the card, in a bit of a step up, we're going to see Tommy Welch, 11-0 in an 8-rounder against Jonathan Vergara, who's 5-0. Don't know nothing about this guy, but he's got 3 KOs to his name, heavyweight from Argentina, known as Chiquito. And the main event over here, it's Harlem Eubank, friend of the show, 18-0. It's for the WBO Global Super Lightweight title. He gets in with Timo Schwarzkopf of Germany, who's 22-5. Never been stopped, though, so you'd expect Harlem to probably win this one on points. Just looking at his losses, he lost on points to Chris Van Heerden, Jack Catterall, Anthony Yigit. Got a couple of decent wins. I mean, he beat Junior Witter back in 2013, but that was a very old version of Junior Witter. Yeah, he's not the best fighter. Beat Miguel Vasquez, though, in his last fight, actually. Beat him on points over 10 rounds. That was back in February of this year. But he actually won that fight by just a point on 2 cards. So could have gone the other way there. Miguel Vasquez now very old, 36 years of age, old for his weight. No offense to you there, Eddie. Yeah, moving on now from that card to this one here that goes down at the Club Social y Deportivo El Porvenir in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Over here, we're going to see return to the ring for Jeremias Ponce. His record at the moment is 30-1. Haven't seen him since his last fight. He got in there with Subriel Matias. That was back in February of this year. Got in with him for the vacant IBF super lightweight world title, and he got pulled out in the corner. There was 2 points in the fight at the time he got pulled out by his corner in round 5. I think his dad pulled him out, didn't come out for round 6. But he's a good fighter, really good fighter, and yeah, he's back here. Like I say, gets in with Andres Tejada, who's 10-2 with 2 draws, known as Little Canelo. Interesting. Okay, what else have we got? This one goes down on Saturday at the Newcastle Arena in Newcastle, Tyne and Wear. It's going to be live on DAZN. It's an Eddie Hearn show. Few fights to mention. We're going to see, I actually like this one here, to be honest with you. We're going to see 4-0 Callum French get in there with Jeff Afori, who's 12-5 with 2 draws. That could be interesting there. We're going to see a fight between 2 undefeated fighters. Ewan McKenzie, 8-0, gets in with Ishmael Davis, who's 11-0. We're also going to see Mark Dickinson, 5-0, get in there with Grant Dennis, 18-5. That's over 10 rounds there at middleweight. And the main event, if I'm not mistaken, is Shabazz Massoud, 11-0. It's for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title, over 10 rounds against Jose San Martin, who's 34-7 with a draw. It's a step up for Massoud. I think Massoud will win this one on points. I really do. And I think you can get a decent price on that. And the reason why I think he's going to win on points is because, one, he's not the biggest puncher at all. But you look at San Martin, he's only been stopped twice in his 7 losses, but very experienced, a much more experienced guy. He's almost had 4 times the fights that Massoud has had. He did get stopped in three rounds to Maurizio Lara, but Maurizio Lara obviously has dynamite in his fists. And he got stopped in his other loss to Emmanuel Navarrete in the 12th and final round. That was back in 2018. So other than that, he's lost on points to everyone else. And he's, you know, he's got some good power himself, 21 KOs. I think Shabazz Masood will probably respect his power and try to win on points, but that's just my opinion. And the final two cards to mention, this one goes down at the Loom Colour Phoenix Centre in Ontario, California, USA. Over here, friend of the show, Ernesto Mercado, 12-0 undefeated. It's a really interesting fight over 10 rounds at super lightweight. Mercado, by the way, is 12-0, 11 KOs. I think he was something like 290-10 as an amateur, a 21-time national champion, or maybe 22-time national champion. But anyway, as a pro, he's been very, very impressive. He's banged out some good fighters, including Hank Lundy, Jason Velez, you know, a few different guys. The one guy he couldn't bang out was Zolisani Ndongeni, who actually got banged out once upon a time by a guy called Prince Dlomo, but that's another story. Went the distance in another loss to Devin Haney. But anyway, he frustrated Ernesto Mercado, and I watched that fight there. It was in, I'm sure it was in Nicaragua. It was in Nicaragua. Yeah, watched that fight live at the time, and I thought he would bang Ndongeni out, but anyway, he didn't. Since then, he's had one fight, and that was back in August. He knocked Carlos Portillo out in just one round. So that was the other time he boxed. But anyway, he's back here against Jeremiah Nakafila, 23-3. Another friend of the show, the Namibian policeman who also owns a pub. Very interesting mix, but he's a good guy, Jeremiah Nakafila. And I think this will be a really interesting fight. I think, obviously, Mercado, he is a good boxer. We can tell that from the amateur days. I think a good boxer against Jeremiah Nakafila will look a lot like Jeremiah Nakafila against Shakur Stevenson. Shakur Stevenson just, you know, completely dominated Nakafila, couldn't get near him. But having said that, Nakafila came back and then knocked out or got a stoppage against Miguel Burchell. Looked great in that fight, but then last time got banged out in just two rounds by Raymond Muratella. So I'm a little bit confused as what was the true Nakafila. You know, was he just that great against Burchell, or was Burchell just completely shot? Was he that bad against Muratella, or did Muratella just catch him cold? I don't really know what to make of it. But all in all, he's massive for the weight. I'm actually noticing, yeah, this is at super lightweight. So, yeah, he's at 140 for this. That is interesting, because not long ago he was at 130. So, yeah, that's interesting. That'll probably take his size away. But, you know, usually he's a tough, durable guy. But Mercado, like I say, he's a big puncher, 11 KOs, only gone the distance once. I think he's probably got the style to frustrate Nakafila, maybe. But Nakafila can bang, man. It's a hard one to call. I wouldn't be surprised if Nakafila could get the upset, but I didn't realise that it's more suited to Mercado's weight. So Nakafila, it wouldn't surprise me if he was able to knock him out. I think his power's real. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if Mercado knocked him out based on the fact that Muratella knocked him out in just two rounds. But then at the same time, I can also see Nakafila being tough enough to last the distance. So basically, forget betting on that one. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to be interesting. The matchmaker is Ernesto Mercado, and the promoter of the show is Ernesto Mercado. So he's got his hands in all the pies there at the Phoenix Center in Ontario, California. And the final card to mention, it goes down at the Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio, USA. Over here, friend of the show, Albert Bell, one of the most avoided super featherweights in the world. I think he's ranked number one or number two in the world with the WBO. I think he's ranked by a couple of the other organizations. He's 24-0. He gets in with Jason Velez, who's 30-11 with a draw. Again, you'd expect Albert Bell to win this one probably on points. He looked good last time out, getting a stoppage against a, you know, an overmatched guy. But really and truly, Albert Bell goes the distance in most of his you know, fights. Jason Velez, I mean, he's old as well. You know, he's got a lot of battle scars, a lot of been in a lot of wars, but he's only been stopped 3 times in his 11 losses. He has lost 6 of his last 7 fights, which is a bit of a concern, and he's been stopped 3 times in those 6 losses I mentioned. He got knocked out in round 6 to Ernesto Mercado, knocked out in round 6 to Gabe Flores, knocked out in round 10 to Oscar Valdez. But, you know, back in 2018, went the distance with Ryan Garcia. At times, he's durable. You know, I don't know what he's got left at this point, but Albert Bell doesn't punch like those guys. So, again, I'd probably lean to an Albert Bell points win. We'll have to wait and see. There's a real height difference, though, in this one. Jason Velez, 5'8". Albert Bell, I think, is 6 foot. So there's a big difference there. And that's a big, big difference at super featherweight for sure. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, former WBO heavyweight world champion Joseph Parker. In part two, there was one piece of news to bring you. And then we did the preview part. Eddie, you've been listening the whole show and haven't said anything. You need to watch some more boxing.
You know what? Honestly, with the review part, I had seen parts of it, but I don't want to comment on things that I didn't see the full fight, and you know, really there's not much to give in a situation like that, because this past week I've been so crazy, with my training schedule. And I'm training guys. Obviously, I'm about to go training guys right now, but also me and Ant been doing a lot of stuff and a lot of videos and putting out a lot of content. And we did like this film study thing last night, and I didn't get a lot of sleep, and I had to go and get up early. So it was just like I just missed out on a lot of the boxing this week, and pretty much honestly most of the time, because I'm so busy all the time. But you know, I'm going to make a point at least one day a week, at least on Saturday at some point, to at least brush up on it and watch some of the live fights. Because, I mean, obviously that's part of what I do. You know what I mean? And we have a podcast. I got to be able to give something to the podcast, and not just, you know, be listening and assist only in, you know, certain things that mean something to me. It should, you know, you got to be a little bit more dedicated to the craft. So I understand what it means to be dedicated to a craft. So yeah, it's just so hard, man, when you're doing so many different things like I'm doing. But I'm definitely gonna be more attentive to the boxing, because I know what we do. And my apologies for not giving enough content out there, but that will be changing next week for sure. Gonna get on it, even if I don't see it live. I'm gonna get on the case for paying it, you know, for watching it, even if I have to recap it. You know what I mean?
There we go. Promising words from Eddie. I'm just not gonna be able to pay him this week, but there we go.
I had to work free. I had to work for free this week because I didn't really do nothing anyway.
There we go. Like I say, that brings the preview part to a close. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 421 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former WBO heavyweight world champion, Mr. Joseph Parker. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. That's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you same time next week.